You can believe all that and be born again and still, hear this, not believe God for your next job, for your next meal, for your next breath. See, a lot of us, we fall into this great problem in Christianity of trusting God with our immortal souls. Oh yes, I believe when I die, I'll be with God in heaven. Glory. But in the meantime, it's up to me. Well, that's going to be a tough walk, and I don't even want to watch. You hear what I'm trying to tell you? See, real Christianity is trusting God for what we can see when what we want to see isn't what we actually see. What we see is Saul with a javelin. What we see is Saul sending troops after us. And I'm trying to get you all to see that God is warning us through this lesson about what happened with David about resorting to ourselves. The wisdom that we accumulated as lost people, quote, and start trying to maneuver and scheme. You say, well, what should David have done? Are you ready for this? Are you ready? Stayed with Samuel at Naoth and just sat there. And let's just see what God's going to do. Listen to me. God said he's going to be king. You can't kill that kid. Is he king yet? No. Then you can't kill him. I've got more news. He can't become king till something happens to Saul. David isn't the walking dead man in the story, but Satan has got him thinking that way. He trusts God, but he doesn't trust God. Boy, I understand that guy now. Gosh, David was almost a mystery to me until he got like that. Well, I understand it. My golly, if God can use this kind of dog, well, there's hope for him using us, right? And that's what Christianity is all about, is God using a bunch of losers and making something out of them. But if we try to make something out of ourselves by scheming and resorting to the tricks of the world, well, we're going to be made to look very foolish, just like David is about to be. Listen, David is beginning a sequence of events that are going to, like a snowball going downhill, roller coaster against him. Let me give you an idea. He started running. He started running. That is not trusting God. Some of you right now tonight, you're in problems. Some of you are in marital problems and you'd like to run. That's no answer. You made a commitment to God. Stick with it. Because once you start running, it's hard to stop. Listen to me. In every human's life, especially every Christian's, there is a time and a moment where we must stop and make a commitment as though we're at the Alamo and there is no back door. And that here I stand, live or die, God help me. No, I don't think the Alamo was a great idea myself. I think guerrilla warfare would have been a lot better. But the point is that the example of that is they dug in, or in the vernacular of the day, they hunkered down. You may recall, beloveds, that when Saul, at this moment of time, right here on the blackboard, when Saul is slain on Mount Gilboa, the Scriptures reveal to us that David was 30 years old at that time. And in 2 Samuel chapter 2, as soon as Saul is slain, God reveals to David to go to Hebron, present himself to the tribe of Judah, and that they would accept him as their king. And they did. The point is, we know how old David was when Saul was slain. 30. We also know about how old David is in tonight's lesson. He was not old enough to go to war when he killed Goliath. And a short period of time has transpired. He is close to 20. And the point I'm getting at is, by just simple, just thinking it through, what we're about to read and study and see are you ready for this? 10 years of being hounded by Saul and his army. I want to talk to you about those 10 years. I want you to understand that as we read during these next weeks, there's no way that God is going to tell us everything that happened to David during those 10 years. Do you understand? The Bible would be 3 times larger than it is. And we have a hard time, David, reading the one we've got. Right, Mark? Come on. Beloveds, acquit yourselves as men. It is so easy for us to read these stories, living in Houston, 3,000 years after David's day, and say, oh, isn't that bad? David was pursued for 10 years. Whoa. Let's get real for a minute. Many of you in this room are like I am. We have problems. They don't go away. And they're the kind of problems. See, some of the problems we have, Joseph, God answers for us in a day, or an hour, or a minute, or a week, or a month. Now, most of us are already pretty dismayed at the end of 1 week. Come on, gang. This is how most of us handle our Christianity. 1 week of no answer from God. And, you know, we're ready to throw up our hands. You see, I'm teaching you tonight about David's failures, but I want you to see that in the midst of his failures, first of all, he's very young. And we're going to watch David grow in these next few weeks. From 20 to 30. You got me? That's our project. Watching God not give up on a jerk that I would have given up on. Oh, of course, I want someone much more perfect than this. Come on, gang. Right? We want to follow a real leader. We don't want to see him have feet of clay. We want to follow someone that will lead us from victory to victory to victory. I've got someone in mind. He's one of David's ancestors. And a funny thing, he lived before David. He's the root and the offspring of David. Do you hear that? But David, see, I'm so interested in David because I'm learning about God. And I want to know what God's like because I'm around. And I live in the real world. And like David, I follow God with all my heart. And like David, I don't follow God worth beans. Do you hear what I'm saying? And see, so what's God going to do with someone that inconsistent? See, the way you get to be an All-American football player is you have a consistent season. Right? But you see, that's not what Christianity is about. 10 years, y'all. 10 years. We're going to see David go from 20 to 30. And the question is, what's God going to do with him on this roller coaster, inconsistent walk that David's got? Because if God's going to throw him away, I may as well eat, drink, and chase Mary tonight. And Mary, you know, she ain't going to run. Mary doesn't run anymore. I don't know if Mary ever did run. What we're going to see is that God goes after David with bulldog tenacity. That God has a purpose and a plan for his life, and God isn't even going to let David thwart it, much less the devil. And that God isn't going to use David because David is so righteous, not in the ultimate sense of the word. God's going to use David because you and I needed it. So that when we get to the last chapters of David's life, we're going to see a man of God. And at any one moment, we can still see that he's a man of God. I saw it back when he was 18 years old when he killed Goliath and said, "The Lord gave me the strength to kill that lion and bear." But I'm having a hard time with him right now. Do you know why I'm telling you this? Two reasons. One, some of you are going to look yourself in the mirror in the next month or two and say, "Did I ever know God? I have fallen so flat on my spiritual face. Was I ever really a Christian? Is God, what's God thinking about me right now? Is He so disappointed in me He's going to throw me out?" Or the opposite, you're going to be looking at somebody else. That's one of our favorites. Now I'm watching you, and you're watching me, and there it is. Well, they can't be any Bible teacher called by God. No Bible teacher called from God would say, do, think, or not think, or be so unfeeling, or this, that, and the other. Everybody's got their opinion as to what a man of God and a woman of God ought to really be like. My Bible says David was a man after God's own heart. Now, that was God's opinion. Robert? So understand that I'm not so interested in David from a historical viewpoint. I got to see what God's like so that I know what's happening to me. If God is a respecter of persons, then I'm in trouble. But if God is no respecter of persons, then He will not pursue after David any more than He will after me. If God will not let David go out of his grasp and out of his hand, if God will continue to work in David's life using both good and bad, using his mistakes, using his sins, both to mold him. Oh, God, that wasn't the way God would like for it to be. But using all of that to bring David to the throne and to make David be what he wanted him to be when it was all over, then even Floyd Jones has got a chance. You hear what I'm saying to you? This is why David is so interesting. Well, just real fast, let me just tell you this. I just got to say this. Down at verse 13, David and Jonathan review their covenant vows. And here's the curse. Most of you have heard blood covenant, my blood covenant tapes. Now listen. And here's the curse, right, when you made a covenant. "The Lord so do to me and more," right? Remember that curse? And remember that was when they split the animals right down the backbone, right through the skull. In other words, if I ever break the covenant, "God so do to me and more." You know, what's more than getting split through the skull and right down the backbone and laid one piece over here and one piece over there? You know, and more, okay? But I notice this. I just got to tell you. Verse 16 says, "So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David." You see the word "made" there? That's the Hebrew word karath, which means to cut. And when you cut, you bleed. Something bleeds. You got it? All right. In other words, it's not a mistranslation. It's just they made a covenant, but it's understood by the meaning of the word that you make it through cutting. Now, I want you to see something precious, though. Verse 17, as we're racing through chapter 20. Jonathan calls David to swear again. Now, they've already cut covenant, but Jonathan isn't satisfied with that. "I don't want you to make this vow with me based on the curses." Jonathan calls David to swear again because he loved him. In other words, "David, this time I want you to pledge to me on the grounds, not that if I ever break the covenant, God's going to split me through the skull and down the backbone. This time I want you to do it just because you love me. That we're going to go through this, whatever it takes, whatever life brings us, we're going through it together. Just because you love me." You know a marriage is a covenant. Just because you love him. "For he loved him as he loved his soul." Now, as you read this, one thing I want to tell you, if you read it carefully, look at verse 5. Look at verse 5, the last words. David says, "I'll hide myself in the field until the third day." Did you see that? "Till the third day at evening. Oh, isn't that interesting? Verse 28, Jonathan tells a lie on David's behalf. Okay, David coerced him into it. If you keep reading, we get down here. Verse 35, it came to pass, in the morning Jonathan went out to the field at the time appointed with David and a little lad with him. When is this? The third day. Now in the Bible, I'm just throwing this out real fast, trying to move fast. In the Bible, the third is always has some sneaky little something about the resurrection. Always something about the resurrection. There'll always be a little sneak in there. And it is. It's over at verse 41. As soon as the lad was gone, David arose. When did David arise? On the third day. You got it. You know where he arose from? Oh, my goodness, I didn't even mark it. Let me see if I can find it. I've got to show it to you because it's going to blow your little minds. Let's see. Ezel, I'm looking for the name of a rock. No, it's before that. Let's see. It's before verse 41. It's way back at the beginning of the story when David first starts laying the plan. Verse 19. Yes, thank you. Let's read verse 19. You know, we got to do it. Come on, gang. You'll love it. And when David is telling Jonathan what they're going to do, or rather, Jonathan is telling David, he says, when you have stayed 3 days, then you shall go down quickly and come to the place where you did hide yourself when the business was at hand and shall remain by the stone. You're going to go down and stay by the stone. So David arose from behind the rock on the third day. Now let's see if any of you remember that there was a stone rolled in front of the tomb. Are you Christians with this?
Amen.
All right. Now, I'm trying to tell you, the reason we're such miserable witnesses to Jews is we don't know the Bible. See, the Bible isn't the New Testament. How many of you knew that? The Bible is the Old and the New Testament. Did you know that? And see, you can show Jews have a different way of thinking than we do. Their culture is different from ours. They tend to see things like this better than we do. They really do. You can show them that David arose on the third day from behind the rock. And you can take them right to the New Testament and watch his son rise from behind a rock on the third day. See, shoom! Let them deal with it. Just let them deal with it. You don't have to, don't argue with them after that. Just say, deal with it. I'm leaving. I'll see you later. You know where I am. You know where I am if you want to talk about it. You don't have to beat the door down. Well, I thought you guys ought to see that. So, look, what am I doing? I'm trying to show you that Jesus, that the Bible is about Jesus, not healing, not tongues. They're in the Bible, but that's not what the Bible's about. The Bible, Mary's in the Bible, but the Bible isn't about Mary. The Bible is about Jesus. He is woven into the woof and warp of every single part of the Scripture. And when you read these stories, if you haven't seen it, you need to, you know, you read a story, you read a verse, you read a psalm, and you don't see Jesus, it's time to say, Lord, I missed it, didn't I? Now, I saw David in that psalm, and I saw me, right? Come on, we always see ourselves, right? Especially when everything's going on. Oh, Lord, where are you when I need you? You know, those psalms, right? Have you seen what they're doing to me, Lord? You know, those are our favorites when we're in trouble. And see, we say, oh, wasn't that a great psalm written just for me? Right? Come on. It's like sometimes when I get through teaching, some of you come up and say, boy, that message was just for me. No, it wasn't. It was for me. Every message I bring, first and foremost, is for me. Y'all better hear that. I have my own personal relationship with God. And if y'all all go to hell, I don't intend to. You understand that, don't you, Lewis? In other words, first God and I have to deal with that before He's going to let me deal with you about it. You hear what I'm saying? I mean, if your feet are getting walked on, you better believe mine got walked on before I got here. Because I'm like you. I'm still being worked on. And so I did that deliberately. I wanted you guys to get the excitement of seeing. But I'm not through. I'm not even through with that example. I mean, I thought that was pretty good. But it ain't over. Look at the last part of verse 42. It says, the Lord says, between my seed and thy seed forever, and he, David, he arose and departed. Gosh, I think that's what Jesus did. He told the women, don't detain him. He arose and departed, and let's see where he went. That would be interesting. Verse, chapter 21, verse 1. Then came David to Nob, to Ahimelech, the priest. Guess what's at Nob? The tabernacle. Now let's see if we've got that right. On the third day, David arose from behind the rock and departed and went to the tabernacle. Have any of you ever read Hebrews? I believe it says there that David went with his own blood into the true tabernacle in heaven on resurrection day. See, the Bible is written with sneak previews of coming attractions. All right? And this is the kind of stuff that's all through the Old Testament showing us about Jesus. Okay? So, 21. How am I doing? Well, a few more minutes here. Then came David to Nob, to Ahimelech, the priest. Now, he's the high priest. And Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David and said unto him, why art thou alone and no man with thee? Now, Nob, listen to me, Nob is only a few miles away. It's a short distance, slightly north and east, a mile, maybe 2 miles at the most, from Jerusalem. And as such, only maybe 2 miles from Gibeah of Saul, where Saul lives at the palace. David still has not made much headway in getting away. All right? And remember, he's been hiding for 3 days. All right? So he says, why are you alone and no man is with you? David said to Ahimelech, now remember, Ahimelech's no fool. Do you understand that the king does not throw a javelin at his son-in-law twice when Nob is 2 miles away, that the high priest doesn't hear about it? Is it getting to hear, you know what I mean? 2 miles away, I mean, he knows things aren't going well. All right? And he sees David alone, and he's afraid. Now, you're not going to believe this. Verse 2. Why are you alone and no man with thee? And David said unto Ahimelech the priest, the king has commanded me a business, and has said unto me, let no man know anything of the business about which I send thee, and what I have commanded thee, and I have appointed my servants to such and such a place. Now, beloveds, that was a lie. And that lie that David concocted to save his own life is going to bring about the death of Ahimelech. You know, it's amazing how we can strive and struggle in the energy of the flesh to deliver ourselves, thinking only of ourselves and not realize the far-flung effects it can have on other human beings. Can you believe that lie? First he told Jonathan in the chapter before to lie for him, and now he's lying. Can you believe it? He who dared face the Philistine giant in single combat to the death is now afraid to speak the truth to a priest of God. Reminds me of Elijah and the 400 prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. He dared to stand up to them and then ran from Jezebel. It's Christian. It's scriptural. Have you ever had a great moment for God and within days fall so flat on your face you just can't believe it was you? Well, if you haven't and ever happens to you and you wanted to talk to somebody about it that would understand, Brother Floyd would be one of them you could talk to. This reminds me of Peter, who stepped out of a boat onto the sea and walked on water and then lied like a dog in front of a little maid at a campfire on the night that Jesus was arrested. No, I never knew him. Never saw the guy. Christianity is composed of liars. Now understand, there's a technical difference. I am not a liar. I am not a sinner. I sin, but I'm not a sinner. I am a son of God. See, when you say what, I am, we're talking about our very fiber, our being. I am not a sinner. That is not my being. I used to be a sinner. Now, I'm a son of God who sins. But I am not a sinner. It is not my nature. I have a new nature that is grieved when I lie and sin. And it's kind of the hell of being a Christian. I sin, but I don't enjoy it anymore. And see, that's how God induces us to give up on it. Sin will always feel good. It'll always be exciting. But it just won't be the same. You're miserable in it. Whereas we used to relish it, chase, pursue, and overtake, now we're miserable. And that's the goodness of God. Because He knows sin will always bring us down. We just don't believe it. Oh, I can see that it'll bring you down. I can see that clearly. I can clearly see that it welled and that you just couldn't hold it. But for Brother Floyd, I mean, I'm above it, don't you understand? See, that's the way the fallen nature tends to think. And though I have a new nature, my fallen nature's still around that old rotting corpse of whom there is no goodness whatsoever. And oh, wretched man that I am, who will save me from the body of this death? He's talking about his old dead sin nature that goes around everywhere he goes. That smelling, putrefying, stinking corpse that Paul could see that just totally embarrassed him. So yes, these men are Christians who lie when they get in a tight to save themselves. Have you ever done that? Don't raise your hand. How about, tell them I'm not here? I mean, there's a good one. Verse 3. Now therefore, what is under thine hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread in mine hand, or what there is present. And the priest answered and David and said, there is no common bread under my hand, but there is hallowed bread. If the young men, see, he sees them now. At first he didn't see any. See, he said, why is no man with you back in verse 1? But now he can see that there are some men with David. We didn't know that before. The whole time David's been hiding, we haven't known he had anyone with him. But now we see there's some men with him. We don't know how many. And he says, but if the young men have kept themselves at least from women, and David answered the priest and said unto him, of a truth, women have been kept from us about these 3 days. Now we know the 3 days he was hiding near Gibeah, near the palace, out in a field by the rock, he had some more hiding with him. Golly, that sounds like leading the captives captive almost, doesn't it? He came out from behind the rock and he had some more with him. And oh, I don't know. He says, yes, we have been kept from women for about 3 days since I came out. And the vessels of the young men are holy. In other words, their bodies are holy. And the bread is in a manner common. Yea, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel. Now, I've got to keep reading so you get enough verse so I can tell you what this is all about. Verse 6, so the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there but the showbread that was taken from before the Lord to put hot bread in the day when it was taken away. Stop. We need to talk. Closing points for the night. Frustrated Floyd. Didn't nearly get where I wanted to. Close though. All right. What does it mean here? You know, come on. If the young men have kept themselves at least from women, gosh, maybe the Muslims are right. Women are really basically unclean. But if we, you know, but it's one of those necessary things, and a lot of cults teach that. No. Let's get it scripturally. If you hold one finger here, we can turn back to Leviticus. Don't lose this place. We're going to be looking back in Leviticus twice. Okay? Look back to Leviticus 15. All right, that's our third book in the Bible. Now, I could really give you several examples of this, but I'm going to give you the best one for time's sake. Leviticus 15. Well, I'll just begin at verse 17. Every garment and every skin whereon the seed of copulation shall be washed with water. Whereon is the seed of copulation shall be washed with water and be unclean till the evening. The woman also with whom man shall lie with seed of copulation, they shall both bathe themselves in water and be unclean until the evening. Among other things, God is teaching basic hygiene. After copulation, you wash. It'll keep VD down real good. Okay? God knows about this. Pagans don't know. They get eaten alive. All right? But notice this. After copulation, they have to bathe and they're unclean. Ceremonially unclean. Doesn't mean you've lost your salvation. Come on. Ceremonially unclean until evening. In other words, the next evening. And then you can go down to the temple, offer up a sacrifice if you want to. You know, do anything you want to. Then everything's copacetti if you want to. Now, that was what the priest was saying. That was the challenge. Are your men, you're about to eat of hallowed bread. Are they ceremonially clean? And David answers, oh yeah, man, we've been out in the tulies for 3 days. We don't have that problem. All right? That's what it is. This is not teaching that you're more holy if you don't. Okay? If you abstain. Now then, though, let's take another look here at what he says in verse 6. So the priest gave him a hallowed bread, for there was no bread there but the showbread. All right? What's that about? Let's take a look at Leviticus 24, verse 8. What I'm trying to do with you now, what I'm trying to impress upon you now is, listen, I'm trying to impress all of you with something. I'm trying to show you how there are head scratchers in the Bible. Head scratchers. What's that about? And I'm trying to show you why we don't know. Most of the head scratchers are answered in the law, the first 5 books. And what were you told the minute you got saved? Come on. What did the preacher tell you? What did that Christian tell you? Gave you a Bible and told you what? Read John. Come on. Read John like the Bible began at John. Okay? Read Romans. A little dab of Ephesians will do you. Stay away from Revelation. That's a deep, dark, mysterious book. Come on. Isn't that funny? God called it the Revelation. It'll hit you. All right, right? So that Christians basically know nothing of the law. So naturally, when we read these verses, we think, oh, I guess I'd better not. You know, I'd like to, but I guess I'll take a cold shower or an apple instead. You know, I mean, what else could that verse mean? I'm trying to tell you what it means. I'm trying to show you scripturally what it means. Now, what about this bread, though? All right? Well, we want to look at chapter 24, verse 8, because, see, I can tell you, listen, in our story tonight, I know what day this is happening on. I know what day David ran to the tabernacle. You say, well, I don't, because it didn't say. Yes, it did. It did if you know the law. You see what I'm getting? I'm trying to encourage all of you that the answers are in the Bible, not in your psychology books. And that if you don't know the answers, if it seems deep and mysterious, probably the answer's in the first 5 books, the ones that we don't read much. Look at verse 8. Okay, I guess I'll have to back up and talk. Verse 5, you shall take fine flour, we're talking about the showbread now. Bake 12 cakes thereof, 2/10 part shall be in one cake. You shall set them on 2 rows, 6 in a row, 12, one for, you know, for each of the tribes of Israel, upon the pure table before the Lord. That's the what we call the table of showbread in the tabernacle or in the temple. It was the one on the north side, small little table, about 2.5 feet high. All right? And he says, you shall put pure frankincense upon each row, that it may be on the bread for a memorial and an offering made by fire to the Lord. Every Sabbath, son of a gun, it's Saturday. Our story is taking place on Saturday. Because what that priest told us is, all I've got handy is the old stale showbread that's been there for a week. See, we're going to read here. Every Saturday, every Sabbath, they replace those and put 12 fresh loaves there. And, as we'll see, the priest could then eat the old 12 loaves. They were for the priest. All right? Every Sabbath shall he set it in order before the Lord, continually being taken from the children of Israel by an everlasting covenant. Verse 9, and it shall be Aaron's and his sons, and they shall eat it in the holy place, for it is most holy unto him of the offerings of the Lord made by fire by a perpetual statute. Look what he says. Verse 6, so the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there but the showbread. That was taken from before the Lord. They've taken the old bread from before the Lord to put hot bread in the day when it was taken away. They're replacing the old bread with the hot bread. It's the Sabbath. It's amazing what you can find. Now notice, knowing that isn't going to save any souls. But it's important that Christians understand the Bible when you read it. Who wants to read something you can't understand? Come on. And I got to admit, you know, those are pretty mysterious verses we've been reading, but I'm trying to show you that if it seems I have wisdom, come on, the only wisdom I have is I read the Old Testament before I came. And I want to encourage you guys to do the same. Okay? Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Did the Old Testament proceed from the mouth of God? Good. Okay? Good. Then that must be the Word of God also. Hallelujah. All right. Jesus may have fulfilled it, but that doesn't mean we throw it away and burn it. All right? And now look at verse 7. It says, what David said, I want. I want verse 5. David answered the priest, of a truth, women have been kept from us by 3 years since I came out, and the vessels of the young men are holy. Here it is. And the bread is in a manner common. He said, the bread, you've already replaced it. You've already replaced it. Therefore, it's fit to eat by the commandment of chapter 24 of Leviticus, verse 9. It can be eaten. Okay? Yea, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel. It says, now it was sanctified in the vessel, but today that you've replaced it, it can be eaten. And so what God is showing us here is that life is more holy than bread. I hope you all got that. I'll say it again. Life is more holy than bread. Jesus didn't die for bread. You are more precious to God than showbread. I'm going to blow your minds. You Episcopalians and Catholics in here, you listen to me and you Lutherans, you from a high church background, Jesus didn't die for your silver chalices that you drink the communion wine from. He died for you. You are more precious than the stained glass windows in your church. You are more precious than the water in your baptismals. You are more precious in the eyes of God than all the silver and all the gold on the fronts of any of your churches. Compared to you, they're nothing. They're only special because God uses them for us. You are so valuable, God came in the flesh and died for you. He did not die for metal. Hallelujah. Last verse. Last two verses. Last three. Quickly. I lied. Verse 7. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg the Edomite, the chiefest of the herdsmen that belonged to Saul. You got that? He's the chief shepherd. He's an Edomite, son of a gun. The Ishmaelites are after us again. He's an Arab. And we're going to see, gosh, Saddam Hussein would have been a great name for this guy, as we'll see. He's an Arab. And we're going to see that the Arabs have never given up on these poor Jews, okay, giving David and his family a hard time. He was the chief herdsman of all that belonged to Saul. And David said unto Ahimelech, is there not here under your hand a spear or sword? For I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste. And the priest said, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you slew in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take that, take it, for there is no other except that here. And David said, there is none like that. Give it to me. David, it didn't help Goliath. Why do you think it's going to help you? Now hear that, Christian.